I've made a decision that one of these days I'm going to finally cash in all those millions of podcast bucks that we've made over the years.
Yeah.
We've got like, it's like a Scrooge McDuck fucking pool of these things by this point,
yeah,
right?
Absolutely. Podcast bucks. We're just swimming in them, sure.
Swimming in them, dude. Speaking of swimming in them, I'm going to cash them all in. I'm going to buy myself a big old boat. You know what I'm going to name that boat?
What's that?
Big Doc Energy. Big Doc Energy. That's going to be my boat.
See, your boat very specifically prefers a big dock.
Oh, yeah. It's a real size queen, that boat.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yep. Okay. Well, I mean, listen, it's not the size of the dock. It's the motion of the ocean.
Motion of the ocean. Yeah. And it's the brand newest installment of Dead and Lovely here at the host at the most. It's me, your boat-loving buddy, Uncle Ben.
And me, your big docked friend, Hollywood Steve.
Woo! On today's episode, we're going to be getting deep down into Hot Fuzz from, what, 2007?
Deep into Hot Fuzz.
Ooh, getting deep into Fuzz, man. That's my favorite 70s pornography movie.
Deep
right?
in the Hot Fuzz, yeah. I love
deep
that
Deep in the Hot Fuzz, man. Is that a 2007?
2007, that's right.
All right. Well, we're going to be getting deep into this flick later on in the show. If you want to get straight on to the movie talk, there's a timestamp for you in the podcast description. But I would advise you to get the socks and shoes off of your feet, crack open a cold one, and chill out with your boys as we catch up, shoot the shit, and talk about some movies and things that we have been watching on.
Speaking,
I think I might just go ahead and crack me a beer. You
speaking
want
of cracking a cold one, I have already cracked a cold one, and I'm about to drink on it here.
Are you suffering from premature craculation? You've already cracked, dude? Shit.
I'm so sorry.
I'm kind of flattered.
I'll get you next time. I am drinking Funky Fauna, one of my absolute favorite fermenter brewers out here. And they make a lot of sours. This one is called Obscure Creature. It is a wild ale brewed with 100% Oregon-grown malted barley and hops, fermented in oak with native wild yeast and conditioned on second-use Maréchal Foch grapes, heirloom apples, and sarsaparilla root.
Holy moly, that's a bunch of stuff. Now, when you say it's Oregon-grown, do you think that was grown on like a pancreas, maybe a liver?
Yeah. I think it's probably pancreatic. It's got a little pancreas flavor to it, I think. This is a great and delicious sour that is so hard to sell because it's 2.8% and it costs like $6.50 a can.
2.8? That's like damn kombucha. Are you a hippie? What are you doing?
I am. I guess I am. But it's so damn good is the thing. Like everything they make. If you're up in this area, Pacific Northwest, and you can get Funky Fauna, the Forest Fizz and the Darklings are two of my absolute favorite things I've ever drank in my life.
Damn, that sounds pretty good. The combination of the grape and the apple is intriguing to me.
And the sarsaparilla. It's all second use, too. So it's like real much more muted flavor because it's already been used, but it's also absorbed flavor from the previous ale it was used in. So it's Obscure Creature is a great name for it because it is a very odd, though, like, delicious type of taste. Like, you'd really don't know what it is you're getting into until you've had it. It's so good, though.
And 2.8, as I say, you could probably have that like at the gym or on a run, maybe.
Absolutely. A 2.8 on a run. just reaching for a nice sour while running. Can you imagine?
Oh, in the heat. Oh, it's got to make you feel good, right? Ugh, sounds rough, man.
It's like 74 degrees here, and I'll tell you what, this is perfect for this weather.
Nice. That's a good summertime sip. It's actually kind of cooler than that here in Tennessee, which is strange. It's maybe in like the, I don't know, early 60s here. It's a little brisk, but it's still
60s.
Pretty damn good. The early 60s, it's known as. Yeah. The hippie culture is just starting.
Right.
It's a good time, man. Got ourselves some sunshine on. Got our pollen in the air.
Oh,
everybody's
good.
Sneezing.
Love
You're
it.
Having a good time.
Yeah, no, it's been 3 weeks of just allergy nonsense for me. Woo. And I'll be real happy when it goes to hell.
Go on to hell, why don't you, man? Uh-huh. It's been a pretty good week. It's been pretty damn busy over here, but not necessarily bad busy. Been staying on top of things, getting ready for a bunch of gigs and stuff I got coming up. And watching myself just a scant couple, two things this week other than our movie of choice. I watched The Greatest Night in Pop, which is a documentary on the Netflix at the moment. Oh, do you know about this one? Have you heard about this?
No. Have you seen this? Have you heard about this?
Have you heard about this?
Kevin? Kevin, have you seen this?
Cars? Dude, it's good. It's so good, man.
What is it? Yes. What's it about?
It is about the making of the greatest song of all time, We Are the World, everyone's favorite song. Bob Dylan, take it. Hubba scoo. Okay, so don't worry about the fact that the song is terrible. That's honestly not really that important.
Okay.
It's all about the making of the whole thing, and it's like got a bunch of interview footage with like Lionel Richie and Bruce Springsteen and a lot of people that worked on the track. It is bananas how they fucking put that together. Do you know anything about it?
I'm assuming drugs.
Dude, they have to have like had so much fucking blow going around in that place because it was like an all-night thing that they recorded it after the AMAs night.
Yeah, no, they were on so much coke. So fucking jacked, coked up that they all were like, this is a great idea. We'll fix world.
Right? Yeah, we can do it. We can totally change it. Write me another line. But like that's why when you watch the studio footage, they're all wearing like costumes and shit. Okay. Like they're all wearing real loud like clothes. Uh-huh. It's because they just came from a fucking award show.
Damn.
It's great. It is such a good watch, man. It's just all kinds of good, candid, kind of fly-on-the-wall footage that they got from the studio recording sessions. And the whole story of how it came together is great. Don't worry about it if you think the song sucks. Nobody cares about the song. The making of the thing is really, really interesting. And Lionel Richie seems like a fucking G. I would love to hang out with that guy.
Okay, yeah. Especially, you know, because I got that blind sister and she's just been... She's been sculpting his face. I don't know what's going on with that.
You don't say.
Yeah.
Well, be sure to tell her he said hello.
Sculpting his face in a way that's not very flattering. And when he sees it, you'd expect him to be like, whoa, fuck.
You nailed it. Yeah, totally. That is what it looked like. Yeah. How'd you know?
This is a reference that the youngsters might not get. Go watch the Hello music video. There you go.
Oh, man.
You'll enjoy yourself.
Bless their hearts, the young people listening to our show.
We got so many. There's a, you know, Christ. I guarantee there's a teen or a tween right now listening and going like, I like it when they say fuck words.
They're too busy playing Nintendo on their PlayStation to podcast now.
Probably drinking a Baja Blast. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly right, man. That's what I'd be doing. Pizza rolls in the oven and Sunny D in the fridge. Man, they're off living their young lives.
That sounds rad. I mean, I don't want the Sunny D because it's going to destroy my stomach.
Honestly,
I don't want the pizza rolls either because of the same issue. But
I want the concept of the pizza rolls.
If we've got Dino Nuggies, I'm set, though. So
there you go.
Yeah.
Also continued my catching up on my backlog of important 80s movies that I've never seen. Watched dang old Footloose for the first time the other day.
Okay. You were hanging out with Kenny Loggins.
Yep. Old Kenny. He was giving me some soundtrack. Mm-hmm. Kevin Bacon. Mm-hmm. He was there just shaking a rump, having hair that looks like the fur of like maybe a little German Shepherd puppy. He's got that puppy hair.
The adults were like, don't you fucking dance in this town, you son of a bitch.
Do not dance in this town, they said.
Uh-huh.
I'll be real. It wasn't that good.
No.
Like, I was really expecting it to be sillier and maybe more fun.
Right. That's the issue with Footloose is like every time somebody shows like a scene from Footloose or whatever, it's like them having fun dancing, and that's not most of the movie.
It's really not most of the movie. Like, there's a few parts where people are dancing around, and then there'll be long swaths of, like, concerned adults and, like, old people in a church and family drama. Like, it's...
That's
I don't know.
That's really what I'm into, honestly.
That's kind of your thing. Yeah. Like, if I'm looking at the trinity of 80s dance movies, I'm thinking of a Dirty Dancing. I'm thinking of a Footloose. I'm thinking of a Flashdance.
Yeah.
I think Flashdance reigns supreme.
Of those three? Yeah. I mean, Dirty Dancing is wild. When's the last time you watched that movie?
I think I watched that. I watched that for the first time, I want to say 2021-ish.
Oh, okay. So it's fresh on your mind that it's crazy, actually, like, insane. There's, like, an abortion angle and all sorts of stuff going
on. Oh, man. It's awesome. Like, that's a crazy movie. I'd probably put that at number two. Yeah. And then I think Dirty Dancing at number three for me of those three movies.
Right. Okay. So that scene that they have in Hot Rod where they just do the scene from Footloose.
Dude, I was not ready for that. It's the same scene. Like, I've seen Hot Rod a million times since it came out. And I think it was like the second or third time I saw it. I want to say Kate pointed out, like, oh yeah, this is from Footloose. And I was like, what? And I was thinking, there's no way that it is exactly like the Footloose scene. It's probably similar too. And it's like, no, they recreated it.
Well,
exactly.
Until he starts falling down a mountain forever.
He does fall down a mountain. Yeah, he does do that. That's better, honestly.
It is better.
I made it better. Oh, man, dude. It's ridiculous, man. Yeah. And I'll tell you, I know I'm definitely getting old because I watch this movie where you have these rascally teens, and they're doing crazy stuff like having a chicken race with tractors, right? I'm watching this, and I'm like, man, this is really... really irresponsible of them. Like, that is a high dollar piece of machinery that somebody's using to make a living, and they just wrecked this thing in a ditch so they could play a game. Like, somebody is really gonna have a bad time paying their bills for a while. Like, these kids, they might need to be stopped.
Yeah. Honestly, no more dancing. That's what
I say. No more dancing in the bisexualist town that has ever existed. Dude, because it's out in like shit kicker country,
right?
And you got this city boy coming in who just loves to dance.
Gosh, he can't stop.
And yeah, he like even like teaches his friend to dance, and he's like, "I want to dance, but I just can't shake it around right." And he's like, "Shake it around with me, friend." There's not one question. There's even like that old guy at the gas station that's like quietly in support of him, being like, "I want y'all to get that dance going now. I know it's important to you." Like, no, that does not happen unless it is the biased county in America.
Right? Yeah. Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. I want that. That sounds great.
Yeah.
But not realistic.
Shake it with me, friend.
There's no question. There's not even a moment. Like, there's no point in that movie. And you're talking about a movie that was made in, what, 1984, I think?
Yeah, ish. Around there, probably.
And, like, nobody drops, like, a hard F at anybody for wanting to dance. That's bananas.
Well, I gotta assume there were, because there are a lot of dancers on set. There would have to have been a lot of gay men on set.
For sure, right?
You know, and there had to be some sensitivity to that at the very least.
Good on them is what I'm saying.
Good on them, yeah.
Yeah. Dance if you want to. You can dance if you want to. You can leave your friends behind.
That's true. Because your friends don't dance, and if they don't dance, well... I know friends of mine.
I see.
So, that's all you've been watching on?
That's all I've been watching on, man.
Well.
What about you?
I also have a very short list of things I've been watching on, but I watched A Late Night with the Devil.
Oh, I'm dying to know about this one. Tell me about it.
Well, I mean, I enjoyed it. I don't understand why it needed to be found footage. I just don't get that. And honestly, it doesn't work in reality. Doesn't work at all when you're calling it found footage. Should have just been a straightforward movie. Yeah. That's my major complaint. And also the use of AI interstitial images. Fuck AI. Fuck it entirely. Don't use it.
Aren't there like some like weird like posters and art and things in the background that are AI generated.
Yeah. I was like,
just fucking pay an artist, guys.
Pay an artist.
Just do it.
Pay an artist. 100% don't use AI. Just please stop. Don't use it in general. Don't use it for searches. Don't train it. Don't give them your free humanity to like duplicate through AI. Fuck that.
Fuck that.
Yeah.
Anyway, no, it is a solution to a problem that doesn't exist.
Nope, we don't have a lack of creativity. We don't. We have so much creativity in this world that it's insane to train a program to do it for you.
Yeah. Anyway. It is. Absolutely agree.
So, anyway, other than that, I thought the performance was really good, and I thought the whole general idea was cool, and the effects were great. I really do wish it was just a straightforward movie. I don't really get... Because, it's supposedly the footage that was shot that night, but then during the commercial breaks, they also have handheld cameras and multiple angles of stuff that's going on stage. Yeah. And why would they do that? It doesn't make sense.
That's kind of the thing, right? Whenever you're doing the found footage thing, it is a really fine line to tread where making it authentic feeling found footage can make it seem more realistic and all that. But then there reaches a point where you're like, well, we have to have a movie here, so we're going to take some liberties. And then at that point, you're like, why do found footage then? Just make a movie.
It really doesn't make any sense, yeah.
Okay. But I've heard it's good, though.
It is good, and it's on Shudder now, so definitely worth watching.
Sick.
Also on Shudder, and one that I had never really heard of, but it was from 1995. It's called Mute Witness.
Witness.
So a mute woman who is a special effects makeup person witnesses a snuff film being made on set.
Whoa.
And then she is escaping from the snuff film makers. It's a real good 45 minutes. And then, a pretty, different other 45 minutes. But at the same time, I did enjoy it. I did, have a good time with it. But the thriller kind of, dies down a good bit for a little bit, then picks back up and dies down a good bit. And it's I kind of liked it more when it was just on the set, which is about the first half of the movie. But I was surprised by it because it was one that I felt like I should have heard of in the 90s.
Yeah.
But I didn't. So.
Huh. Well, how about that one?
Yeah, it's also on Shudder.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that I'd run out to watch it, but if you got Shudder and you're like, what should I watch? Might as well try Mute Witness.
Maybe try that one out.
Yeah.
Oh, you know what? I just did remember one other thing I did watch piecemeal this week.
Okay.
Rewatch some goddamn It Follers, because it's on Netflix right now. Fuck, man.
Boy.
What a good movie that is.
It is. And it sure do foller. It's just right behind you.
It does. Yeah. Look out.
Oh, no.
There he is. There he is. He's tall.
Ah.
Sometimes he's not. I don't know what he is.
I'm reading on a clamshell.
Woo. That's a cool fucking movie, dude. It is. Did that director do any other stuff yet?
Oh, I don't know.
I don't know either.
I have not thought about it. Probably
I should check that out because I really thought there was a lot of promise in the feel and vibe of that movie, man. It's a really cool one.
Yeah, for sure. I also have been watching Parks and Rec, as I've reported in the past.
Yeah, still parking, still wrecking.
Yeah. Boy, anytime they have politician cameos, it's real embarrassing.
No, those are cool guys, man. Cool guys. It makes them more relevant to us, dude, to see them on our programs. Right. It makes them more like us.
John McCain was on. Fucking Joe Biden was on. Ugh.
And cool guys on.
NBC did that a lot because 30 Rock also would have Al Gore and stuff. And it's just I don't get it. I don't get what the fun is in seeing politicians in your comedy.
Make them human, but to add doesn't. Humanity.
They appear all of them look so robotic and weird.
Well, because they're fucking actors 24/7 anyway,
right? But it's so weird because Leslie Knope has this obsession with Joe Biden, and it's I don't get why do that? I do get it for the character because she's supposed to be this hyper neoliberal type. And it's funny, honestly, when you think of it that way. But then it's kind of like cringy, too, when you're watching it. Because it's like, ugh, we didn't need this. We don't need Barbara Boxer in this scene. We just don't. Anyway.
Still a good show, though.
Still great. Yeah, absolutely. Having a blast with it.
Hell yeah.
Yep. So that's it on my end.
Word, man. Yeah, it's been kind of busy here. It's going to stay busy, but hopefully I get time to watch a couple things. I definitely do want to watch that Late Night with the Devil. I keep hearing good stuff about it. So
yeah, you should.
Maybe I'll check that one out and report. I think the only other thing that I watched this week was one of the greatest buddy cop movies of all time.
That's right. Hot Fuzz.
Hot Fuzz. Oh, my God, dude. Okay, now let's go ahead and just get down to the nitty gritty here.
Knit the grit.
Horror movie, cop movie, action movie.
What all
kind
of
movie
them.
Is this?
Yeah, it's all
is
of
it?
Them. It's a buddy, yeah, buddy cop comedy horror movie.
We don't have to justify why we're doing this on our horror
no,
show.
We
it's
don't.
Free.
And also, that we'll talk about it, but there's so many elements that clearly make this fit into the horror genre.
Okay, actually, I did just kind of fuck that up, though, because this is a Patreon pick, wasn't it? So
yeah.
It's not really free, but we're happy to be doing it. We talked about doing this on the show a million times because we're both like, yeah, I think it's close enough to being a horror movie, sure.
Right, yeah. And also, like, it's part of the Cornetto trilogy, and, you know, The World's End is very clearly a horror movie, as was Shaun of the Dead, so we kind of had to do it anyway, but, you know, we'll get into all that. We want to talk buddy cop.
That's right. We're going to be talking about our favorite buddy cop features here in the Preview Palace.
Welcome to the Preview Palace.
Now, one thing that we can both agree on here on the show is that there is a massive need for police reform in the United States.
I would say there's fucking absolutely get rid of them. But sure, reform. Yeah.
Let's start there, right?
Let's not start there. Let's get rid of them. There's no reforming this nonsense, bullshit, piece of shit motherfuckers. But let's talk reform.
But let's be real.
Yeah.
There's some great movies about
cops.
Oh,
sure.
Like, initially, whenever we started putting this together, we were like, let's do best cop movies. And it was like 80 million movies because, holy shit, man, if you wanted to make like a kick-ass action movie in the 80s and early 90s, it's like, let's make the good guy a cop.
Yeah.
That way you can kill people and you don't think he's a bad guy.
Right. Yeah. Honestly, like, yeah, it's one of the things that, like, so many cops that grew up on cop movies think that that's what being a cop is. And they become... honestly, fucking...
Anyway.
Yeah. I don't want to talk about cops. I want to talk about buddy cops.
No, not really. Buddy cop movies, which are highly based in reality,
yeah,
clearly.
Yeah, 100%.
There are a lot of fucking good ones, and especially because we grew up when we did, we've watched a whole ton of them, man.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd like to share with you guys some of our favorites and let us know about your favorite buddy cop flicks over on the Facebook group, because I'm sure that we have forgotten yours. But have you remembered A Lethal Weapon?
Oh, man. Yeah, Lethal Weapon. Great time. I mean, honestly, some parts of it, not a great time. He's going to off himself there at
he
one
sure
point.
He sure is. Boy, I forget about how depressing a lot of that movie is until I watch it again, and I'm like, oh, yeah, it kind of starts with him at the end of his rope.
Yeah, and that's a little tough, but also a man's children get taken hostage, so that's fun. It's fun. It's a fun movie, God damn it.
I'm trying to remember. Does the first one have that part where Danny Glover is on the commode and there's a bomb in there?
Is that the second one, I think? I think it's
I couldn't remember
one.
If it was the first or the second one. I always thought that was so weird because like his whole family is in there with him and he's just like sitting on the toilet like dropping trowel.
Mm-hmm.
And he's probably had a shit already.
Yeah, I'm going to assume... Like, you don't sit on the toilet thinking, oh, maybe I'll poop. You're normally
just
doing
on
it
on the chance that I do.
Because your body was like, hey, I'm gonna.
Yeah, gonna. Yeah. First Lethal Weapon is a solid gold slammer, though.
Yeah.
That is a really, really, really fun
I
movie.
Like
it's just a great
too.
Element of the wild card renegade cop and the straight-laced guy who's getting too old for the shit, even though he's not really that old for that shit at that point. Let's be honest.
That's a good point. He's not that old for that shit, but he sounds old when he says it, so it works.
He does. Yeah. It does absolutely work. That's a great one. And like you said, the sequels are also pretty fucking good. The whole series stays
fun
pretty
time.
Good, man.
Mm-hmm. They got Joe Pesci in one of them.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. That's right.
A little Pesci in there.
Man, that fight scene that's like in, you know, in the yard, in the rain. I think there's like
right.
maybe that fire hydrant's coming out, down or something.
Uh-huh.
God, it's good, man. It's good.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a fun time. You know, one of my favorite buddy cop films. It's 21 Jump Street.
It's fun, dude.
Yeah.
That was like way better than it needed to be, in
yeah,
my opinion. I had low expectations going into that one, and I had a blast. It's
yeah.
so fucking funny.
Yeah, it's a good time, and as is the sequel. My name
22
is Jeff.
Is great. It gets ridiculous uh-huh. meta. Yeah, my name is Jeff. Oh, man.
Yeah. Those it's are good. Fun movies. They really are. I mean, you know, we know Jonah Hill sucks or whatever. Channing Tatum seems all right. Seems
old
like
tater
cool
face.
Guy. Old tater
face. He seems cool.
Old tater face.
Old tater face, man. I love potatoes. I'm not knocking
hey,
them.
Exactly. Listen, nobody's upset when you hand them a potato. Well, unless it's like not cooked and they're hungry. Then they'd probably be upset. But
it's kind of a letdown.
Yeah. Yeah, no.
Could you
those,
imagine
those movies
if Channing Tatum... Okay, I'm just imagining this.
Okay.
Imagine Channing Tatum
uh-huh.
with a sour cream beard and a bacon mustache.
Okay.
And chives.
You get me.
For eyebrows.
I'm interested. All right.
You know, who can't love that?
I don't know. I maybe a heartless miser of some sort.
For real.
Yeah.
Gotta be, man.
Right.
Yeah, that's a good buddy cop flick right there. Very over the top, very silly, very much you know, taking the piss out of the old buddy cop movies, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Oy.
Yeah, and then the second one's got that full, like, whole meta element to it, too, that
oh, yeah.
I enjoy, yeah.
I broke the seal on the British accent thing for this episode, by the way.
Yeah, no, I heard that.
Yeah. Did you notice it?
I noticed it. It was real good. At first, I didn't, because I was like,
it, yeah.
oh, a British fellow is talking now. And then I was like,
yeah.
wait
oh,
a
is
second.
Is someone else
no,
on the line?
Ben.
Operator, get Liverpool off the line. You said.
Yeah.
Are the Beatles here?
Yeah, I did think that. I did think for a second that Ringo Starr had wandered in. But turns out, no. It was your mm-mm. flawless British
that's
accent.
That's just my accent.
Yeah.
My flawless accent. it has been a long time since I watched Rush Hour. How does that one hold up?
Oh, I don't know. I haven't rewatched it in a long time. I wonder if it holds up at all.
Right.
Uh-huh.
I remember it being fun back then, but
yeah I don't
maybe,
know.
Maybe I was dumber then. Maybe not.
Maybe
I had
not.
Great taste.
Yeah. I mean, it's in my memory, at the very least, I'm pretty sure that it probably doesn't hold up, but it did make me laugh in the 90s. So
gave you those deep 90s laughs, huh?
Yeah, the deep 90s laughs where you're like, ah, ha, 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 I'm carefree. No one will ever fly a plane into a building.
Dude, I was literally about to fall out and be like, ha, 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 9/11 hasn't happened. Yeah, I don't know why. We twinsied on that one. Oh, well.
Yeah. So, Rush, I mean, that they have a great dynamic, though. I mean, and Chris Tucker is obviously hilarious. So, yeah, I don't know. I might have to revisit that one.
I think I should sometime on a Saturday yeah. afternoon. Bad Boy. What do you know about them? What you going to do with
rewatch,
them, huh?
We watched those recently. It was a rewatch for me. First time watch for Anna. So, take a drink. but, yeah, Bad Boys. Honestly, the best parts of Bad Boys are seemingly improvised. Like,
yeah.
I don't think Michael Bay brings a lot to the Bad Boys franchise. I feel like it's Martin
no.
Lawrence and Will Smith yeah, making probably. That like charismatic sort of still like bro douchey toxic type of shit, but it's they're good together. They're funny together.
Oh,
so,
they're great.
Yeah.
yeah.
But you do still have the Michael Bay action, which that is great. Like, I do love Michael Bay action. Like, the way he shoots
stuff.
There's
no denying it.
It's
you know?
Insane. Yeah.
It would be like saying, like, McDonald's French fries suck. It's
do
like,
you're
yeah,
being
we
wrong.
All know
yeah.
they have no like, nutritional value, and they're basically poison, but they're also good, and you can't deny it.
They're not poison. What? I mean, what is in there that's poison? MSG? That's not poison.
I mean, whatever's in there, they don't rot, which is strange.
Well, okay, I've heard this from people, and here's my counter. Tell me when you've seen a rotten French fry ever.
I mean, the problem is I usually eat them because they're so good.
Right. They don't rot. That's just the thing. I've never seen a rotten French fry.
Fry a regular-ass potato. It don't turn on you.
I'm betting. You know what? This is a Mythbuster thing we should do. We gotta bring them back. Get the Mythbusters on this. Do fries ever rot?
I think we're going to have to get to the bottom of this. I think there's already a YouTube video about this, and I'm going to look it up.
Oh, later. There probably definitely is. Yeah. And
look at the mole on that fry, I'll say.
Yeah, and at the end, I bet like whatever YouTuber like eats the fry, and it's like, oh, fuck you, guy. Mm. Anyway.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Yeah. Okay, well, we'll find out about it. But yeah, the Michael Bay action is great. I remember Bad Boys 2 being even better.
It is better.
Yeah.
Yeah, those two are fun. I haven't watched Bad Boys 3.
I don't think I have either.
Yeah, don't know.
There's like another one coming out, right?
Yeah, I think so. Speaking of Will Smith, though, how about this buddy alien cop movie?
Here come the men in black. Ooh, Galaxy Defenders. They're kind of cops, right?
Uh-huh, yeah. I mean, they use cop language and whatnot, and then they're buddies. So
they are.
You know?
So that checks out.
Yeah, that original, the first one still holds up. Like, we rewatched it recently. It's still funny. Vincent D'Onofrio's great. Good physical comedy and stuff going on. Yeah, cool effects. Yeah, so it's fun, and they are a good duo because you got the straight-laced Tommy Lee Jones and the more, like, you know, funny and outgoing
Will Smith. Not by the books.
Yeah. Yeah, they're really good together. Now, part two sucks. It's a terrible movie.
I remember you saying you watched that again recently, and you were like, man, it's so much worse than you remember.
It's so bad. Damn. Yeah.
I need to see it again. For some reason, in my memory, I remember it being pretty good, but it's been so long since I watched it, man.
Could not get into it. But yeah, that first one, real good buddy cop movie.
That's a good buddy cop movie. You know, The Bad Boys franchise is referenced in Hot Fuzz as well as one Point Break.
That's right.
20 yeah. out of 10 Point Break.
20 out of 10 Point Break. Yes. Like,
I adore it. I fucking love Point Break. Yeah. It's a fantastic movie.
Yeah, it is. And I think, like, probably on our list might be one of the best just films of the films that we listed for buddy cop movies, because it's just a really great film.
Oh yeah, crazy about Swayze. It's got a little canoe in there. It's a good time. You're gonna have a good time with that one. What about The Other Guys? I enjoy that one. That's a silly ass buddy cop movie.
Yeah, Will Ferrell, hilarious.
Mocky Mock.
He does a good job in comedies as the straight man, because I really believe he's not funny.
I think he thinks he's being the cool guy.
Of course he
does. And that's why it comes across as funny. Like, I really do think that he is there believing that he's the action star that everybody wants to see on screen. And it's like, no, you're being a dumb guy.
Yeah, yeah.
You just don't know it.
Yeah, but they are very funny together. Yeah. I mean, honestly, Will Ferrell just is funny with anybody, it feels like.
Totally.
Because he's funny. That also has that like opening bit with Sam Jackson and is The Rock, and they jump off that building thinking they're gonna survive and they just die.
They just die. Dude, I cracked up laughing whenever we got to that part. That's a good one for sure. You mentioned Dragnet, which is one that you grew up watching, yeah?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I recently rewatched it and I think it's great. Perfect buddy cop duo of the straight laced by the books guy and the guy who cares far less about the books.
Does it have Dan Aykroyd in it?
Yeah, Dan Aykroyd and Tom Hanks. Yeah.
You know what else he was on?
What's that?
We Are the World. Apparently Dan Aykroyd is singing on We Are the World.
Are you kidding me? Yogi Bear himself.
Yeah. Yes. Huh. He is on We Are the World, apparently. I have no idea why. They didn't really cover why he was involved. I don't know.
I wonder if he got a ghost blowjob afterward.
Yeah, yeah. He was probably there for the ghost BJs, I'm pretty sure. Dragnet, though, that's one you're a fan of.
Yeah, yeah, I love it. I think it's it holds up. You don't have to know the Dragnet series it's based on, really. Though there are, like, obvious in-jokes and references to that series. I think it's just a really fun, funny buddy cop movie.
What about a movie where a cop is a buddy with a kid?
Last Action Hero.
Fuck
damn.
Yeah, read my mind.
It's a great one.
What a winner. That is a winner in Jesus' name. I fucking love that movie.
Yes, and we're definitely going to have to do that one, Action August or something, because it's great.
Ah, so fun. Watched that for the first time not long ago, and I definitely love that one very much, man. Does Demolition Man count as a buddy cop movie?
I think so.
It does.
Yeah. Because you got Sandra Bullock and Sylvester Stallone, and they have that dynamic where she's the much more by the book, and he's the old school guy who doesn't know the rules. Like, yeah, it's a buddy cop movie. Now, I've never thought of it that way, but it is.
He don't know how to fuck with that sex helmet, you know?
The sex helmet, makes it good. Yes. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
He don't know how that works, and she does. That's part of the dynamic.
He also does not understand the three seashells.
The three seashells. God damn it, I love Demolition Man so much. That is a ridiculous movie in every way.
Yeah,
infinitely watchable.
For sure. Yeah.
And Die Hard with a Vengeance. How about that one? That's another classic.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, I don't love all the Die Hard sequels, but I think Die Hard with a Vengeance is a good one.
I agree with that. Yeah. Yes.
But yeah, yes. I mean, you kind of almost have a buddy cop dynamic in the first one with Bruce Willis and Carl Winslow. But they're not actually together. They're just kind of like,
yeah,
you know.
They're kind of long distance pals.
Yeah.
They're pen pals, if anything.
Yeah. Die Hard with a Vengeance, of course, the better option here for buddy cop.
Yeah, it finally gets an in-person buddy in that one. That's an enjoyable one. Does Dredd count? We did Dredd back in August.
You said that, and I was like thinking, because like, what you have is a straight-laced, by-the-books cop in Dredd.
Very by-the-books,
with
a
completely opposite partner who's bubbly and
empathetic.
Fun and sweet. And yes. Yeah. I guess Dredd is a buddy cop movie.
I think that by the end of the movie, he sees her as a friend, right?
Yeah, I think so. And that's how buddy cop movies work. Like, over time, the curmudgeon learns their lesson and becomes a bit more open because of this other partner.
As we talked about on our episode, I mean, by the end, Judge Dredd gains a friend, and she gains a
job.
Crippling emotional callousness and a job. She is kind of devastated in that
she
one.
Does,
but I still think
yeah.
it's a buddy cop movie, and it's fucking good, dude.
It is fucking good. Yeah, if you haven't seen Dredd or listened to our episode, go check it out. Good.
Give that one a watch and a listen. That's a good one right there. I think that's all that we got for a roundup of buddy cop flicks that you ought to check out. But again, we want to know about your favorites. Let us know about those over on the Facebook page, the Instagram page, all the places you guys can find us. Let us know about your favorite buddy cop flicks. We'd love to hear about them. And now you're about to hear about Hot Fuzz, which is about cops. That are buddies.
Yeah, that's right.
Them.
You are about to hear about that.
Mm-hmm. That's right, dude. Surely this was not the first time you've watched this movie.
Absolutely not. I've seen this movie so many times.
Many times.
Yeah.
Much many. Yeah.
Yep. This is, I think, my favorite of the Cornetto trilogy.
Dude, that's a hot take because Shaun of the Dead has a legendary following that
it
deserves.
I love Shaun of the Dead.
I do too, but dude, spoilers, I might be with you.
Yeah.
I think that this might be the best of that trilogy of movies. I think I actually do enjoy this one over Shaun of the Dead.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, the thing that it has that Shaun of the Dead doesn't have is there's a lot more opportunity to meet and enjoy all these characters. Whereas in Shaun of the Dead, people have got to die over time, you know? In this
zombie movie, of course.
You know, we can have, you know, all these Martin Freeman, Bill Nye, fucking Olivia Colman, like all these people playing distinct characters throughout. I think there's probably at least 20 characters that you get introduced to.
There's a lot. Yeah. It's a big-ass cast.
And they're all distinct. They're all, like, very clearly realized characters.
Yeah. And you get to spend time with them. Yeah. Unlike, you know, Shaun of the Dead, where a lot of people do end up as casualties because that is kind of the nature of the story that they're telling there.
Yeah.
In this movie, you do get introduced to so many hilarious and memorable characters that are played by iconic actors, and they do stick around.
Yeah.
The cast of this is kind of bonkers.
Yeah, and it's insane.
The movie moves very fast, but I never feel like it leaves you behind as a watcher.
No. It's always like... I mean, it's always entertaining, and you always have the chemistry of Nick Frost and Simon Pegg, which...
They're so good.
They're so good together, yeah. And this also is, you know, written by Simon Pegg and Edgar Wright, and they had worked on the script for like 18 months and watched like 130 cop movies.
Jeez.
Yeah. They really put the work into it, and you can tell by how... Everything pays off in the script. There's no like superfluous lines, really. Everything has some payoff throughout.
Yeah, that's true, man. And all the watching of those cop flicks kind of has resulted in the great British buddy cop movie, which is something that never really existed prior to this, right?
Right, yeah. Well, and you could see why there is an issue with that, because buddy cop films very much rely on guns, just a lot of guns. And normally, when you think of England, you don't think of a lot of guns. So they had to like contrive to get a lot of guns into the film, which, you know, happens when they go see... the guy that, what's his name, that actor, damn it, he's in Game of
Walder
Thrones.
Walder Frey.
Yeah, yes, that one.
Filch, Argus Filch.
Yes,
yeah.
When they go to see him and he has all those guns, like that's their way of getting guns into the movie, because you absolutely can't have a buddy cop film without guns. You just can't.
It's funny when you watch this from like our American perspective, especially our, you know, Southeastern American perspective, where we are such a gun-heavy culture, and, you know, the fucking... The Knoxville Police Department has tanks. Like, tanks.
I know. What for?
Military vehicles. Tanks.
What for?
It's really weird to watch this movie and have this guy who is an absolute badass super cop that hates guns.
Yeah.
Like, that's such a weird thing from the American perspective to watch, right?
Yeah. And he, you know, he clearly... He has shot someone in the line of duty, and he's clearly not, like, proud of it, which is a different mindset than what we see here in America with cops.
Perhaps.
Yeah.
Perhaps.
Yeah.
Yeah. As opposed to promoted.
Right. Yeah. So, I do love, though,
kind of different.
The way that, because... There aren't a lot of guns there. The guns that they have and the weapons that they have confiscated are just a wide variety of things, to the point that a person gets killed with a blunderbuss in this.
Dude, I was going to say, when that blunderbuss showed up, I was like, all right, we're getting old-timey now.
Yeah.
You fellas is old-timey.
Best, probably coolest blunderbuss death until, you know, that Shinzo Abe guy got it last year.
Oh.
Yeah, he was killed with an electric blunderbuss.
I forgot about that.
I seriously, whenever like the blunderbuss death happens, I was like, when was the last blunderbuss death? And then I was like, oh, fuck, I remember that.
We're bringing it back. Death by blunderbuss.
Goddamn right.
Wow, man, maybe that's a new way that the kids can use that slang phrase, bussin.
Oh,
it means
blunderbussin. Blunderbussin for real.
Damn, he bussin. He's got like a big ass blunderbuss at his side. I shall fire upon you with my blunderbuss. Oh, he bussin. No cap.
No cap.
Meaning, it's not a cap gun.
Yeah,
it's a
no,
legitimate
blunderbuss.
But you know, like the cop movie influence in this, it reaches really far. This movie pays homage to so many great cop flicks.
Right.
And a lot of people, much like how they classify Shaun of the Dead, classify this as a parody of buddy cop action movies.
Sure.
And this is where we get into a real gray area here.
Right.
Is this a parody? Is it an homage? Because I feel like this movie, while, you know, making fun of and having fun with a lot of the tropes of cop action movies, it also sits up there with the best of them. Very much,
yeah,
like how Shaun of the Dead does, where it's like, yeah, it's totally having fun with a lot of the zombie movie tropes. It's also one of the best zombie movies ever.
Right. Yeah. And yes, I think there's definitely a fine line between homage and parody, and this is homage.
Yeah.
Like, this is not parody. They are not, there's no attempt at making fun of buddy cop movies. They're just doing them. It's kind of like the way in which The Lonely Island is comedy rap, but it's really just rap. Like,
yeah,
they're just making hip hop. It's just goofy, but it's not like hip hop can't be goofy and isn't goofy all the fucking time. So this is honestly to me just homage to great buddy cop films, which honestly, every great film tends to be homage to other films. Like,
sure,
because it is people who have studied that particular genre and really understand it and really, really want to nail it and get it right.
Yeah, I mean, and Tarantino has made an entire career of that.
Yes,
right.
Yeah. So
I would never call anything he has done parody. Like, I would call it homage. Whereas, like, when you watch a scary movie, you're like, you know, one of the scary movie franchise, I'm
right.
saying, you're like,
mm-hmm.
okay, this is a parody of horror movies. When you watch Naked Gun, for example, that's a parody of, yeah, action, cop, spy, sleuth movies. It doesn't feel like it's at all celebrating how fun those movies are and how much we like them.
Right.
Don't get me wrong. Obviously, I love the Naked Gun movies.
Right.
But it's a parody straight up.
Right.
It's a fine line, and I don't even know where it begins and ends, but much like pornographies, I know it when I see it, right?
Yeah.
I know it when I see it.
Oh, man. I think that, honestly, like, yeah, it does do it a disservice to call it parody. Because it is just so well executed. And that, like, is really evident in the entire way that the film develops the buddy cop friendship between the two,
yeah.
Because you've got Nick Frost, who just wants so much to be in one of these buddy cop movies, and he like admires these like real hardcore cop types, and he so admires Simon Pegg that he's instantly like a puppy with him. Like, he just wants to know, like, have you ever shot anyone? Have you ever done this? Have you ever done that? Like, and Simon Pegg is annoyed by him, but pretty quickly learns to appreciate him and actually like him, and it changes who he is. Like, that whole relationship is so perfectly developed and then becomes,
and it's done in earnest.
Yeah. And that's interesting too, because it really comes down to the chemistry between Simon Pegg and Nick Frost. Like, they're just great together in anything they're in, because they do genuinely like each other and have a really great chemistry. And I think it's interesting though that in the original script they had a love interest for Simon Pegg, and they got rid of the love interest, but then just gave all the love interest lines to Nick Frost without really changing anything.
Aww.
And you see it. Like, there is a deep love there and appreciation.
Yeah.
And it's really sweet.
Yeah, it does add to the bromance of the entire situation, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But it's done in earnest. It's
it
not like like a cynical, sarcastic, like, oh, here's the badass guy, and he's going to take the soft, funny guy under his wing. Oh, how stupid is this, right? No, it is played very earnestly, where it's like, yeah, this is how this would develop, for sure.
Right, absolutely. And, yeah, the scene where they, like, where basically they've been getting drunk at the pub, and then he essentially invites him in for a nightcap.
Yeah, dude.
And then they end up watching Bad Boys and Point Break together. Yeah, it's so sweet. It's like a real sweet emotional relationship between two men that isn't played for laughs. It's actually just played straight.
Yeah, that's very true, man. It's definitely true. And they are so fantastic on screen with each other. You know, this does have so much of that buddy cop DNA, but the funny thing about it is, and this kind of gets us into the is this a horror movie or not kind of territory. The funny thing about this for me is if I really just looked at the stats of this movie on paper.
Yeah.
And I see a movie that is a crime mystery with a black glove slasher murderer.
Right.
With lots of brutal gore scenes in it.
Yeah.
I'm going to say that sounds a lot like a Giallo movie.
It sure does.
I think this movie is more of a Giallo movie than it is a buddy cop movie. It's like a like a Giallo movie and a buddy cop movie got put into the telepods from The Fly.
Uh-huh.
This movie came out.
Yeah, and it started retching up acid.
Yeah. It's so Giallo, though, right?
It is. It is very Giallo. It also has the same setup as The Wicker Man. You got a very by-the-books cop going into a strange community with their own ways and a lot of mysterious death. Like, I think that this movie, like, going into it, I thought we were doing kind of a wild card, but after watching it, it's like, I don't know. This is a buddy cop action comedy that is also a horror movie.
It's got to be.
Yeah.
I mean, the gore alone sets it into horror movie turf. I always forget how brutal this movie gets. I mean, the head shears stabbing is brutal.
Yeah.
The decapitated heads that we see of Romeo and Juliet, like, that's like Hereditary shit.
Yes, it
is. It flips over to their severed heads on the concrete.
Yeah, it's badass. And then that chunk of the roof or whatever falls off on that guy and his head explodes.
Oh, my God. He gets, like, reverse pyramid headed.
Oh, my God. That's not see in an action movie. That's not
you're not
in a buddy cop
Boys.
Movie. This is horror movie stuff.
But if it was like a, you know, kind of crime mystery slasher thriller Giallo movie like Tenebrae, that would be right at home.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. I mean, so yeah, there's all the elements of a horror movie. It just happens to also have the buddy cop action comedy going at the same time.
Yeah, and like much better dialogue and a great sense of humor than what we usually see in giallo flicks.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's very fun. I mean, gosh, Olivia Colman, like, literally it seems like everything she says is sexual.
Oh my God, dude, the scene where they're at the fair and there's like the spit roasted pig
and she's like, that's me after a couple pints. Yeah, okay. Those two dudes, like, she was standing next to probably knew what was up.
Dude, like, everybody around her just reacts like, classic Doris.
She's great. Jim Broadbent.
Oh, a great big bushy beard.
Yeah,
he's so lovable. Even when he's like the bad guy at the end, he's so fucking lovable, man.
Yeah, he's great. Timothy Dalton, great.
Dude, okay, Timothy Dalton, man.
Yeah.
Total man crush right there. Dude.
Oh, yeah?
That's a sugar daddy free boy, for sure.
Okay.
For sure. Man, I want to talk like that. I think that there's a time in my life where, like, I catch a plane somewhere, I uproot, I start a new life under a pseudonym, and I just begin talking in such an interesting and smarmy way like Timothy Dalton does all the time. And nobody would know I was putting on a voice.
You should be Timothy Dalton.
Yeah, Timothy Dalton is a pretty believable name, I think.
I think so.
He talks so fucking cool in this,
He does. Yeah. We also have two characters who we cannot understand. Which leads to a scene where they have to be translated for, which is great.
I love that so much, man. And I forget about how much I quote this movie and how much of like my own dialogue comes from this flick. Like, there's that part where they're out there with Walder Frey out on his property, and he says like "I suppose," but it just comes out like "Ajamo."
Yeah.
And I say that all the fucking time, and I forget that it comes from this movie. Like, it's funny enough that you do have that one cop that's introduced that just mumbles everything and he can't understand a fucking line that he says. But then later in the movie, he comes in handy to translate another guy who has that same accent.
Yeah.
For some reason, Nick Frost can understand
one,
the cop
but not
guy,
the other. Yeah.
But not the other, which is ridiculous.
Yeah, but I mean, we're from the South, and I've certainly been deep enough in the holler that I've had to have somebody who barely is understandable translate for me somebody who is less understandable.
Yeah, that's true. That's fair, you know?
I love the Andes. So they're dicks. The
Andes.
Patty Considine fucking killing it.
It's amazing to see that guy in so many different roles.
Yeah.
That guy is incredible,
he
man.
He is very good. Very funny in this. I think everybody's killing it. Like, everybody is just nailing what they're supposed to be doing and really making the characters so perfectly distinct and weird.
Oh yeah, that's the thing about it, man. Like, a movie with lesser writing, any degree of lesser writing, with this many characters, I would have such a hard time keeping track of who's who. I mean, we've done so many movies here on the show that are kind of like mystery thriller type things like this, and I have such a hard time keeping track of what character is what. There was a movie we did kind of recently on the show, I think it was like a fucking Shocker or something recently, where I was like, I was having a hard time keeping track of which character was which in
it. Or it may have been Death Spa, I believe, because
there's
Death
Spa,
so
yeah,
many people
right.
who look exactly alike. Yes,
and that's got the mystery angle too, except all the characters are totally interchangeable and it doesn't matter, and it's
right.
impossible to keep up with who's who. But man, every character in this is so fun and so clearly defined. It does help that they are played by, like, you know, megastar smash actors most of the time.
Yeah, I mean, even to the point that we have uncredited cameos from Cate Blanchett and Peter Jackson.
I just learned about this. What? Like, that's Peter Jackson as Father Christmas stabbing him in the hand.
Yes, and Cate Blanchett is Janine, his ex-girlfriend. But she's under all like that mask and everything. Like, that's such a funny cameo to do. You have this like gorgeous actress, you never see her face.
Amazing.
Yeah.
God, it's so funny. I love that scene where he shows up at the crime scene to talk to her, but then he's also like corner of his eye sleuthing the whole time, being like, you know, that window is broken from the inside or whatever. Like,
yeah,
he's still on the job. He can never clock out.
The premise is the ultimate cop movie premise. He's too damn good of a cop, so they have to kick him out of the fucking city.
Making everybody
look
bad. Give
me your badge and gun. You keep arresting people. Stop it.
Yeah. Yeah, you're being too good at it. Get out there to the country, which is honestly where the real shit is. That's where everybody is heavily armed, and the communities are highly insular and can get away with the serious shit that goes on in this movie. It's kind of a country horror movie.
Well, and country, yes. Countryside is scarier. As someone who's grown up in, you know, Talbot, Tennessee, and also lived in Russia, lived in Los Angeles, lived here in Portland, scariest places I've ever been were in the country. Scariest situations I've ever been in were in the East Tennessee countryside.
I'm thinking, you know, off the top of my head about some of the scary situations I've ever been in, it is stuff way out in the country, man.
Yeah.
It's like delivering pizzas to addresses that were out by a bunch of like semi-commercial chicken coops and this old abandoned Texas Chainsaw Massacre looking house out at the end past the coops.
Yeah.
Where there's no one around to notice.
Yeah.
If you got fucking killed on their doorstep, dude.
Right. Yeah, it's inherently scary in some way. It's why when we talk about suburban horror, it's like the suburbs are scarier because, despite the fact you're around a ton of people, you're absolutely isolated from them as well.
And if you're an outsider, you're dealing with the hive mind aspect of that, which is what this movie really is about. And again, kind of that Wicker Man premise as well.
Absolutely. And so like, and what I do love about this too is that it's like, it's not just fascism that they're doing.
Hag.
Yeah. In which they set up so perfectly with the fascist thing. Like,
love it.
But it's not just that's going on. It's also just pettiness. Like, he thinks that he's figured out, like, all of it, and he's come up with this very complex plan that involves, like, trying to have as much property near this like new bypass or whatever.
Yeah.
In reality, all the murders are about petty little reasons. Like, he was a bad actor. She had a bad laugh.
That was like kind of part of this movie, is that he had kind of overcopped it. Like, he was going in there with his big city mind, being like, okay, this is a ploy for real estate and property assets that are near this bypass, yada yada. When in reality, you go out there in the country in this quaint little village that is one village of the year for how many years straight.
Right.
And you end up with these petty ass people that are always on the board of every fucking HOA that you've ever signed money away on.
Right.
Deciding how everybody should be living their lives based on their standards.
Yeah. And that, it's also, you know, we're talking about the script being written by Edgar Wright and Simon Pegg. They grew up in these areas. In fact, it's shot in Simon Pegg's hometown.
That's sick.
So they're really playing on stuff they know. And it's interesting because even, you know, despite the fact the South is never going to look like England, like, it's a completely different type of place, there's still the same minds, still the same types of peoples in small towns in the country. It's still the same mindset. Yeah. It's still all the same. And so it's relatable and weird in that way. You don't often relate being Southern with Britishness, but there's some similarities at times for sure.
Yeah, and I love that it does stick some toes into that. Yeah, that country horror,
right?
That sort of primitive British countryside horror.
Yeah, the folk horror and don't stuff. Get yeah,
yeah, folk horror, right? Yeah. There's a little bit of that in there, but as well as like a pretty good amount of American slasher influence.
Oh,
like
yeah.
All the kill scenes with the mass killer are straight out of Scream.
It feels that way. Yeah. It feels definitely Scream inspired with the hood and whatnot. And yeah.
Multiple killers, same
multiple
deal.
Multiple killers, all that. Yeah. Yeah. I think they took a lot of great inspirations and made it into something very unique. Like, seeing all these inspirations, at no point would I say, like, oh, this is just ripping off Scream, or this is just ripping off Bad Boys, or it's never ripping anything off. It's just, it knows those things well, and it's utilizing elements at times.
It's definitely ripping off Romeo and Juliet.
Love me, say that you love me.
Dude, oh my God. I love so much that they're doing this shit-ass production of Romeo and Juliet based on the Baz Luhrmann one, which is
terrible.
So oddly specific.
Yes.
And they're awful at it. Their thinly veiled fucking affair that they're having on stage is so funny. And then, yeah, at the end when they bust into Lover Fool, and then it even ends with... It's so dumb, man.
Oh, my God. Yeah, just... But, like, it also perfectly encapsulates, like... just how deluded people can be, like, you know, if they have a little bit of talent in a small pool, they can become very deluded as to what level of talent they actually are at.
For sure, man. Yeah. But enough about me. Let's keep talking about the movie.
You are not in a small pool, dude.
Oh, man. Dude, the way that... what is her name? Is it Lucy Punch? The actress
Lucy
that plays
Punch.
Her laugh is so fucking funny, man.
It is.
She's great.
Yeah, she is. Yeah, I think that they did a great job pairing those two up as well, because she's gorgeous and young, and it looks like that hair piece is insane. Like, he's hanging on to something. He's got that a convertible he drives around and stuff. He's like really cool going guy. Through a midlife crisis type of thing. Yeah, it's just such a funny dynamic.
Yeah, it is, man. Yeah, those influences in the movie go into some of the way that a lot of the shots are super stylized.
Right.
Like, there's parts in this that are very Michael Bay. Like, when it gets into the cop action stuff at the end of the flick, and it's doing all those shots where there's sparks raining down, and the camera is spinning around them during dialogue, and he's like, yeah, Roy.
Yeah.
Like, all that is Michael Bay as fuck.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
And it works so well in the moment, you know?
Yeah. It's great. I love, and it's, you know, it's more of the action shots we got from Shaun of the Dead as well. There's quick zoom ins and stuff as they're doing things, giving the montage more of a sense of action and whatnot. I love it. I love Edgar Wright's directing.
Oh, yeah. He's fantastic, man. And there's a lot of callbacks to Shaun of the Dead as well,
including Shaun of the Dead being in the bargain DVD bin.
I love
it
that.
Was titled differently, but it's the same like cover.
That's funny, man. I didn't even know that they had like color coded the Cornetto stuff to go along with this trilogy.
Yeah,
of
this one's the blue one, right?
The blue one, yeah. So whenever they get the Cornetto ice creams, it's blue to go with the coppers, the bobbies,
right.
Isn't it?
The bobbies, isn't they?
Whereas in Shaun of the Dead, it's like the strawberry one, which is red to go with the blood, and I guess in World's End, it's green, like right. The good old sci-fi UFOs and shit.
Yeah, I'm excited to get to that one because I haven't rewatched that movie, and I haven't either, and I don't know why.
Like I remember liking it quite a lot, but for some reason, I just haven't watched it again.
Yeah, same. So I'd love to give it another shot because rewatching this just reminds me, like, God damn, Edgar Wright's a great director. Simon Pegg and Nick Frost are so good together. It also made me want to rewatch Shaun of the Dead. I just didn't have time.
Oh, yeah, totally, man. Yeah, this one is pretty long. Like, I was kind of put off when I looked at the runtime of this movie. I was like, oh, shit, this is like over 2 hours long. Damn.
Yeah.
But, dude, it
doesn't
flies
feel like
by.
It. Yeah, it doesn't feel like it's long at all. And that's like... Yeah, like as I would mention, Mute Witness, like that's an hour and a half movie that felt to me like it was almost 3 hours. This is a two-hour movie that feels like a tight 90 minutes.
It is so well-crafted and so fast-paced, but it never feels like relentless or exhausting to watch. I never feel left behind, as I mentioned earlier. I never feel like I'm not sure what's going on.
Right.
Yeah. It just really keeps you along for the ride with constant good humor, good action. It never gets too bogged down by getting ultra serious. Like, Shaun of the Dead gets pretty grim.
Yes, Shaun of the Dead is very serious because it has to be. And that is inherent with zombie films, that there's a lot of seriousness and a lot of human emotion and stuff. This, especially with buddy cop films, genuinely, like, the most emotion you usually get is one of the guys being like, I like you, guy, and the other one being like,
yeah.
So, like, this does have very sweet scenes between Nick Frost and Simon Pegg while also never making it serious.
I couldn't remember at the end whenever the sea mine goes off, which, again, what a great payoff that is.
Yeah.
The sea mine actually does come back into play. I could not remember if Nick Frost died as a result of that or not. I couldn't remember at that point. That, you know, it cuts to like 1 year later after that thing blows up, and I'm like, shit. I can't remember if he dies at the end of this or not. And it kind of does a little fake out with the gravestone. It's like, no, he's still here.
Yeah.
It gets kind of serious just for 1 second where you're like, oh, shit, are they? Nah, it's fine.
Nah.
I think it was like the right amount.
Yeah,
you know?
that would have sucked at the end to just turn it into a downer.
Yeah.
But I think, the movie does a good job of always giving us, like, you know, enough action and then slowing it down with something funny. And then maybe having an expositional scene that's going to be largely comic itself leading into another action scene. Like, the pacing and the way that they use action to keep you entertained but never to overwhelm you is great.
Yeah, the rhythm of the movie is really, really excellent. Like, it never feels like there's a moment where you're getting bored or they're spending too much time on something. The pacing of the movie really is excellent, for sure. And it really helps, too, that there's so many setups and payoffs throughout the entire thing. And Shaun of the Dead did this very well, too, but I think this one does it even better. I mean, so many little lines that come up early in the movie that you think aren't really going to be that important.
Yeah.
They all have some kind of payoff later on. Like, even whenever Simon Pegg, he's talking to the Andes, and the Andes are like, oh, out here in the country, everybody's armed. And he's like, who's got guns? And he's like, every farmer and his mom. And then later on, like at the end of the movie, whenever Simon Pegg comes back to the town, the first people he has to fight are a farmer, and then the farmer's mom is the one with the gun. Like, little stuff that you wouldn't think twice about until you go, oh, actually, they did tell me that was going to happen earlier in the movie. Even all the stuff that Nick Frost, when he's, you know, kind of idolizing Simon Pegg earlier in the movie and asking him those questions about, like, have you ever, you know, jumped through the air shooting two guns and all that jazz? They get to do all that. They tell you everything that's going to happen in the movie.
Yes. And that's, I mean, that's just good writing. It's economical. Everything being said is both good for the moment, but also is going to be followed up on later in the movie.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah, it does it so well. There are, I mean, a million instances of that kind of setup and payoff that we could bring up in the flick, but they're all done, like, very intentionally, and it really builds a sense of, like, continuity throughout the entire movie as well.
Yeah, the Aaron A. Aronson bit. That's funny.
Oh,
yeah.
Man. Like, such a throwaway thing. Yeah. Like, oh, we'll go through the phone book, start with Aaron A. Aronson.
Uh-huh.
And then at the end of the movie, there he is.
Yeah.
Ooh. Before Timothy Dalton gets that fucking spike through his chin.
It's so brutal. It's so brutal.
Brutal, man. I also just love how over the top that scene is. They're fighting in the little miniature town. It's like a very
it's
Godzilla
fight
scene.
Yeah, it's Godzilla.
Scene.
They're doing Godzilla.
But then, you know, once again, Lethal Weapon style, like, there's that water feature that gets destroyed, and it's like raining down on them while they're doing this rough and tumble fight in this little village. Like,
it's awesome.
It's classic cop movie stuff. Like, it's well done, but just a little silly.
Yeah. I think they just did all that work in watching all those cop films, spent 18 months on the script. Like, you really see the work at the end of this. Like, you really see that they had actually put in enough effort to make this script what it is. Like, it certainly is helped by all the performances and all the great, like, just wonderful actors who bring every character alive. But clearly the script is just so well done.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, totally. Soundtrack is dope, too.
Yes, it is. It's fun. Fun one.
Yeah, everything in here is pretty memorable. I love all the scenes where they're, like, doing paperwork that are super action-packed.
Yeah.
All the soundtrack stuff that goes on behind that.
That was something that, because, like, apparently they talked to a lot of cops and stuff to try to get ideas, and they actually use lines that they heard from those cops as lines in the movie and stuff. But one of the things that they learned from cops is that cop movies miss out on the fact that most of the job is paperwork. So that's why they included the paperwork scenes.
And that's even why, like, the cops in this little town don't really want to do the detective work and bust people and all that.
It's the,
like,
paperwork.
Oh, I just leave the paperwork.
Yeah.
Oh, terrible. Who cares, right?
Right.
So good, man. There was a moment in here that I caught that gave me real Suspiria vibes. Let me ask you if you caught this. Whenever early in the movie, whenever Simon Pegg just arrives to the town and he goes to the pub and he sees all those, like, underage drinkers.
Right.
There's that one kid who has, like, I swear to God, man, it's like they told him, do the most British laugh possible. And that kid is like, ha, 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 ha,
yeah.
Ha, 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 ha. It's the most British laugh of all time.
That laugh and had a crumpet.
Yeah, oh, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, his braces catch that glare.
Yes.
And it shines on him. Just like, you remember in Suspiria, there's, like, the kitchen lady with, like, the knife or whatever
in the
hall, and it glints on Susie's face.
Uh-huh.
It felt very much like that to me.
Okay. I like
that. Suspiria braces.
Yeah, that's cool.
And I love the statue man too, by the way. That's another like recurring feature in this movie that I love, especially when he's like down in the crypt and he's seeing all those like gruesome corpses. It's like corpses of fucking children with rats on them and shit. Again, very brutal, very giallo style gruesome shit. But then there's like the living statue guy who's like still in like living statue pose. That's so stupid.
Yeah. I do love when they like he comes across all the dead bodies and you see the old cop with his great bushy beard.
He does have a great big bushy beard. It's doing all the like callback lines from earlier, talking about the annoying kids and the hoodie guy or whatever. Then it's like a great big bushy beard.
Yeah,
God, it's so good.
It is.
I don't know how many times it took me watching this to realize that that's the fucking hound in this.
Yes, it is the hound as the inbred character that, might be a little insensitive presentation of a character with some intellectual difficulties. But also, you do kind of have to include an inbred character, right? Like, if we were writing a movie about our own hometown, how would we avoid it?
There would be one. If
yeah,
it was
there'd
being
have
accurate,
to be one, right?
Yeah. At least in Talbert, man.
Right,
Tennessee, so, there probably would be one.
I do understand if somebody thinks that's kind of an insensitive take.
A little insensitive,
On that character. But also, they having an inbred character is intentional because that is what the country's like. And there are... people. There are inbred people. There are. I went to high school with some inbred kids.
We're probably related to some.
Yeah, we're probably related to some. True. Yeah. Yikes.
Yeah, it's a thing. It took me forever to realize that was him, though, man. Like, what a different kind of role.
It is.
What
we just, like, so different.
Saw him in.
He's such... Yeah. Because he's obviously being goofy, and it's working. Like, he is funny. But that's not what we're used to from the Hound.
For sure.
I like,
any like complaints about the movie other than that?
Not really. No.
I don't think I really do either. There's not much about this that I don't like.
I wanted to mention that this movie has several background characters who have directed great films. Joe Cornish plays Bob, directed Attack the Block. Alice Lowe plays Tina. She directed Prevenge. Stephen Merchant plays P.I. Staker, who he also has directed several movies, including Fighting With My Family, which is fun.
Oh, no shit.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, man.
And Peter Jackson as Father Christmas.
Well, yeah, of course, right? I love that a swan ultimately defeats the bad guy in this.
Yes. Yeah, because we know... we know about swans. I mean, there are no geese.
Ugh.
But I don't want to fuck with a swan either.
Hell no, no. Swans are fucking terrible, man.
Yeah.
Ugh. It's a really, really likable flick, man.
Yeah.
Like, there's not much about this movie that I think struggles in any way. It does really tread that fine line between being a movie that is having fun with the tropes that we know from that genre of flicks, but also doing it in a loving kind of way. And doing its own thing with it at the same time. It's really the same treatment that Shaun of the Dead did with zombie flicks, where it is very much, you know, one foot in parody, one foot in absolutely adoring homage to the movies that made it. And it also stands up there with the greatest examples of it.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And honestly, this, I mean, I don't know if I could put any other buddy cop film above this. Like, this probably is my favorite buddy cop movie.
Let me think about that.
Caught you on it. You didn't know that was going to be said. Now you got to think.
Now I got to think about it. You really might be right, man.
Yeah.
I mean, I do love Point Break.
Point Break's but, okay. That's all right. You know, there's definitely an argument for either one. You're right.
But damn, dude. Shaun of the Dead. I mean, Shaun of the Dead. Fucking Hot Fuzz is absolutely like in the top three.
Oh, yeah.
For sure.
Definitely.
And it's probably not number three either, you know?
No, I would say not.
You got any other things that you want to chat about this flick, or you want to put a number on it?
Honestly, it's despite it being 2 hours and a whole lot happening, it's a pretty simple film. Yeah. And I think we've pretty well covered all the things I wanted to talk about. I'm ready to rate it. And, I mean, honestly, this is not a surprise to me. I'm pretty sure I gave Shaun of the Dead a 10. If I didn't, close to it.
Yeah.
I think this is a better movie, so it's a 10.
That's fair. Yeah. You know, I think I'll probably have to side with you right there, because I want to say I did give Shaun of the Dead probably in that 9-ish, 10-ish sort of range. Mm-hmm. So considering that I think I actually enjoy this movie start to finish more than Shaun of the Dead, I can't help but give it that too. So,
absolutely.
Yeah, man. I'm with you. Double dimes.
Hell yeah. Dropping 20
double
cents.
Double dimes. Damn, we want to know what you guys think about this one over on the Facebook page. It's a place where you can hang out with us. You can have a scone or a crumpet. You can have a bit of jam.
Suppose.
What? What? What?
What?
I love when Aaron A. Aronson says ta.
Yeah. Aw.
Ta. It's cute. That's adorable. We should adopt that.
We should. We should say ta. That's great.
I like it. We want to know what you guys think about this one over on our Facebook page, our Instagram page, and all the other pages where you guys can find us. Use our Linktree page to get to those pages, including a page where you can give us money if you want to go to a page where you can do that.
And money starts as pages before they chop it up into money.
Ooh, so, that's a good point. Yeah, it does.
Yeah, go head on over to patreon.com/deadandlovely. Become a patron on any level. You get to hear our Patreon exclusive stuff, including that Cheech and Chong 420 special we just did. If you become a patron on a $5 level, you can submit a movie to the Smoker Bowl, and then we draw from the Smoker Bowl, and we cover that movie late, just like we did for Joshua Dominic's submission today. Hot Fuzz.
Oh, Josh!
That's right.
Oh! Oh! Josh!
You know the move. You know I'm sexy.
Anyway, so... Patreon, do that. Go
forth, do the thing, sign up today, have a good time, hang out with your boys, and be sure to tune in next week. Now we're coming back for a episode on a May the what?
A May the 4th.
Oh, May the 4th? Oh, hey, what? May the 4th be with you, sir.
Yeah, well, technically the episode will come out May the 1st, but that's before May the 4th, so you can listen to it on May the 4th.
You can do it then, and then you'll enjoy it.
Yeah.
You can do it.
Yeah. So, we're going to be talking about a little flick that happens in the star.
It does.
And there are wars.
Yeah, there's wars going on.
Uh-huh.
There's stars and there's so much sand, which our protagonist hates.
Doesn't like it. Don't care for it, he says.
Hates that stuff. Yep. Hates that sand, dude.
That's right.
Oh, man.
We're going to be, we're going to be talking about him when he was a little bitty boy. And guess what?
Little baby boy.
He's going to, try to have a relationship with a 15-year-old. It's weird.
Sure.
And then he does some pod racing. And he says, now that's what I call pod racing.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, he does that.
We're going to be talking about The Phantom Menace. That's right.
Wild card installment.
Yeah.
Not really a horror movie at all, but it is a May the 4th movie by request from you guys.
Yeah.
I look forward to dumping all over this thing.
Oh,
I don't know
surely,
the last time.
Yeah.
Actually, I do know the last time that I watched it. It was several years ago on a Snowden weekend. We just decided, let's watch through all the Star Wars, and we rewatched this one for the first time in a long time. And we were both like, man, that was not a good movie.
You know, I don't think I've ever rewatched it.
Dude.
When I did my most recent Star Wars watch through, I did not watch it. I skipped it. I don't even see the value in it. So there you go. A little preview of what we're going to be talking about next week.
A Phantom Man Ass.
A Phantom Man Ass. That's right.
Here's a first. If you have any ideas for what a good preview pals would be, let us know about those on the Facebook.
Oh, yeah. That's a good idea.
How about that?
Yeah.
You know?
That way we can just source it from you guys. It'd be a lot easier.
Yeah, let you guys do the work, and then we don't.
Yeah.
And then it's easier.
That's great.
So let us know if you have any ideas for what would be a good preview palace for that episode,
yeah.
And be sure to tune in then. I will be your Jedi buddy, Uncle Ben.
And I will be your Sith Lord enemy, Hollywood Steve.
Oh, shit. Yeah. We'll be dead and lovely.
Bye.
Adolf Hitler.
Mm-hmm.
During his time on Earth, became one of the greatest merchants of death, misery, and demise that human history has ever seen.
Okay. That's, yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, greatest. I'd say most infamous.
Greatest maybe. In numbers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Of course. Of course.
Yeah.
Clearly, his well-documented destruction of the Jewish people, as well as the Romani, mm-hmm. his own people, anybody he saw unfit.
Uh-huh.
It is well-documented, well-known.
Right.
Of course, there are also cultural casualties that came along with the Nazi regime. For example, sure. the use of the once great, once proud symbol of the swastika, which was used by many cultures all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
Now is tainted, obviously.
Sure.
It shall never be used again, and it'll never reclaim its spot as a symbol of virtue.
It's but
one of the lesser casualties that I feel like doesn't really get talked about enough in the fallout of the Nazi regime and Adolf Hitler's reign is that of the bottle brush mustache.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Can't touch it. Can't do it anymore.
No.
Right?
No. I mean, some people have tried, notably Michael Jordan in that one commercial.
He did that for a second. Mm-hmm. Ooh, I forgot about that. Now, obviously, that seems like a very, very minor casualty in the grand scheme of things.
Like, not a lot of people were rocking that anyway.
No. But, I'm just saying, can you imagine that you're the guy who has been trying to find the right look year after year? You just can't really find your look.
Uh-huh.
Because you know how it is with guys' faces, man. Sometimes, once a guy reaches a certain style phase, it's like, oh, there he is.
That's
it's like when
person.
You see Tom Selleck with the mustache.
Right.
It's like, that's what he's supposed to look like.
Exactly.
When you see when you see Jason Momoa with a beard, it's like, boom,
there
way
you go.
Better.
Sure. Uh-huh.
Way better. I'm just saying, can you imagine that you're the poor guy who has been going through facial hair configuration after configuration, and you're getting tired of it. One day you're like, I just can't find my look. I'm going to shave it all down. Little off the left side, little off the right side, little off the left, little off the right. Just trying your options out, right? And let's just say that you shave it down to where you get to bottle brush phase, and you look at yourself in the mirror, and you're like, there he is.
That's the
Fuck. I've never looked better. Fuck.
That's a real shame. Yeah, I mean, it feels like somebody at a certain point could take it back, right?
I don't know that you can, because like,
I mean,
the
Jordan
reason I was
tried
thinking
and
about
it didn't
this,
work, so yeah, it's clearly very difficult.
Well, I was thinking about it in terms of like when we saw Barty Crouch in the Harry Potter movies, and he shows up on screen and it's just like Hitler.
Yeah.
Like, you can't disassociate the bottle brush mustache and Hitler. Yeah, if Michael Jordan in the height of his powers couldn't reclaim it, I think it's a lost cause. Can you imagine how you would feel if you just look at yourself in the mirror and you're like, I'm the world's handsomest man when I have this.
No.
I also cannot have this.
Damn. Wow.
Damn you, Hitler. Damn you to hell.
Keep finding new reasons to hate Hitler.
Yes. Yes. They just keep on going. Tragic.
It's a damn shame.
It is a thought, though, you know, because some guys, they just get the right mustache, and it's like,
I know,
boom,
yeah, absolutely.
You're Burt Reynolds.
Once you,
know? You
figure out your facial hair construction that really works for you, it'd be a
there
damn shame if it just happened to be a Hitler stash.
Yeah, and you can't do it.
No,
so.
It's not legal.
You have to forever be a paler shade of yourself just because of that fucking asshole.
Deal with it.
Yeah.